Hello, free spirits, authorpreneurs, green lighters, and cool kids. We're so happy to be here doing another episode of Right Minded. And thank you so much for listening and for your support. And I'm feeling actually an extra dose of gratitude today because we're focusing on a subject that I have dedicated a lot of myself to in the past 8 years, for sure, since co-founding She Writes Press, and even beyond that to the beginning of my career, because I got my start in indie publishing and there I've stayed. And today's guest is the CEO of the Independent Book Publishers Association, where I'm currently the chair for a few more months because I'm going to be terming out after an amazing 6-year run with this organization. And Grant and I are both strong advocates of indie publishing because its values are so aligned with our personal ethos and also with our respective companies. So Grant, I thought it would be fun today to start with a conversation about what indie means to each of us.
Yeah, that's a great question. Indie can mean so many different things, I think. On the level of publishers, I think of all of the wonderful small presses who are dedicated to publishing voices that tend not to fit into the bigger publishers' catalogs. And I want to make sure that that's not seen as a commentary about the quality of those books. In fact, I think it's often quite the opposite. I so often find that the most interesting books are published by indie publishers because they're interested in publishing books that are different and riskier and edgier, you know, both in content and writing style. And in this age where big publishers are more interested in finding blockbuster authors and people with large platforms, the indie presses are really, I think, more important than they've ever been. There are also indie authors who are publishers themselves, and I view them largely as an outgrowth of, this is to minimize them, I think, in some ways, because I think of them as an outgrowth or an expansion of the maker movement in many ways. And I say that because of the do-it-yourself mindset that is required for it. It's both empowering in the sense that it's all about getting your voice and your work out there. And it's all about finding a way to crash the gates that, unfortunately, the gatekeepers like to keep closed. What does indie mean to you, Brooke?
Yeah, when I first started in publishing, the press I worked for, North Atlantic Books, was decidedly indie. It is indie because it's independently owned, in their case by a husband and wife. Indie has always embraced all of independent publishing, which is basically anything that's not corporate publishing. So that's how I thought of it. But then when self-publishing hit the scene in such a big way, self-published authors embraced the label wholeheartedly, calling themselves indie authors. And to your point, they're also publishers, so they have their own imprints. And so that landscape of indie publishing is so big, and it actually accounts for a larger chunk of books published than non-indie publishing. So I personally think that this idea of authors embracing the indie label is great because it elevates indie publishing as a whole. And one of the things I'm looking forward to talking with our guest today, Angela Bowl, who's the CEO of the IBPA, is about the many ways in which indie publishing is, what you just said, more exciting and interesting because it has the capacity to take risks that the big publishers just won't take or they can't take. And we're living in a publishing world right now that's big on accountability. So it's also quite interesting for those of you who might be following publishing news, which is that the big five publishers are getting tons of pushback around unpopular business practices, things like throwing huge advances at certain chosen authors to make a book, also hierarchical decision making that resulted in the staff walking out following the announcement that Hachette had acquired and all but published Woody Allen's memoir without even informing their own staff about it, which is kind of a seemingly obvious bad strategy. And then there's just general sentiment that these things aren't happening with indie small presses. And I think that's because by necessity, indie presses are more collaborative. And so it's kind of like the underdog team, even though it's so big. And my own experience is that there's a lot more transparency and generosity and less scarcity thinking inside of indie circles. And I have personal experiences with this too, because one of the reasons that I jumped ship with Seal Press was because Seal had been independent when I first started there. And over my time there, they got acquired by a corporate publisher and the vibe changed, the values shifted. And that is the subject of my TEDx talk. And we've talked about it before, but I'll reiterate that my love of indie publishing is so strong because it saved me. You know, indie publishing virtually caught me in its safety net when I couldn't be at Seal Press any longer. And the people that I've met in this space are so incredible. They're so passionate. They love books. They want to do, you know, the absolute best that they can do with what they have. And so for me, it's about having found a home and a community, and also just being at home among indie writers and authors.
That's really cool, Brooke. And I relate personally as an author, actually, because I published my first book, Fissures, a collection of 100-word stories with a press called Press 53. And I have another collection of short stories, All the Comfort Sin Can Provide, coming out with Black Lawrence Press, another indie publisher, in just over a year. And both of these books are different, for lack of a better word. So they definitely don't fit neatly at a big publisher. But I think that's a good thing, because I think they get so much more care and attention on the indie side. I noticed that I'm involved in a much better, more holistic way as an author. For instance, I get really closer edits and much more input on things, like the cover design, even, because I'm actually working directly with the designer, whereas with a bigger press, that wouldn't be the case. And the editors, they have a lot of skin in the game, because they're not working for a big kind of faceless company. They're usually working for their own company, or one that they really care about. And also, sometimes people think that you don't get much publicity support from indie publishers, and that can certainly be true, just because they're small and they don't have that capacity. But at Black Lawrence, for instance, they're giving me a budget to enter the collection of stories into contests. And I don't think a big five would actually, you know, even really think to do that or worry too much about things like that. And I want to just pass on one anecdote. I recently interviewed the author Marlon James. And he said an indie press literally saved his career, because they published his first novel after it had received 78 rejections. And I think that's from editors and agents. But as a result, he went on to win the Booker Prize and also be nominated for the National Book Award. So, you know, here's to underdog presses and authors. I think authors should pay more attention to indie presses, in fact.
Yeah, totally. And what a cool story. And I've heard so many of those. I mean, 78 rejections is a lot, you know, so the tenacity mm-hmm. of that. And it does make you more grateful, of course, when you land with someone who's finally ready to take a risk on you. And I totally relate to the underdog thing, because I like being in the trenches. And it can be hard in publishing. You know, I've spent a lot of time in the past 8 years since co-founding She Writes, fighting for legitimacy and insisting that books be judged for their content and not the business model. And I honestly think I do that because I believe it's fair. That's the bottom line. I'm very committed to the cause of leveling the playing field, because the big five to date are not exhibiting great leadership in the book world. And I did want to read this piece that I found a couple weeks ago from The Outline. The author of the piece is Maris Kreisman, and she wrote, "Book publishers have long seen themselves as the guardians of free speech, bastions of moral purity, whose imperative is to publish each and every side of an issue and all points of view. However, in recent years, as book publishing has consolidated into a business that now only has five major players known as the Big Five, the bottom line seems to hold more weight than ideological imperatives." And so I think it's an important note, because there is a big sea change happening in publishing. And it's been needing to happen for a long time. And it's finally getting a comeuppance. And I do think that those who stand to benefit are indie authors and independent publishers, because there's only so much of these crazy business antics that can happen before it actually starts to tarnish these publishers' reputations. So I don't think it's too late for them to change course, by the way. You know, this is not just about the big five are bad. And, you know, I do wish it would be otherwise. But I think if they begin to listen to their employees, you know, pay attention to what people are saying that is not working for them. You know, it'd be nice to see a big five world in which money and author fame didn't dictate 100% of the acquisitions decisions. I'm not sure that can happen, but I absolutely think it would be a good thing for publishing.
Yeah, definitely. I find the state of major publishing so often depressing because of everything you said, and that they're often business driven and misguided in ungenerous ways, and ways that undermine them, I think, in the end. When I think of writing and reading books, I think of the community and human connection that's at the heart of it all. Yet the big publishers often don't do too much to nourish that, I notice. And I'm thinking of Macmillan's recent battle over ebook access with libraries. And libraries are essentially grooming generations of book buyers from day one, and they're doing it for free. And also, they're buying a huge number of books every year. I think there's 17,000 libraries in the United States, so they're a huge source of income to the publishers. So I think they need more support, not less. And then also the Big Five publishers are actually notorious for how little they give back to the writing and reading world in terms of overall philanthropic support. They're so often pushing product in the short term instead of working to build environments to nurture readers over the long term, which is what I see indie presses and indie bookstores and libraries actually working hard to do, is building a long-lasting community of readers and writers.
That's right, Grant. And it's important. I think we do want to look at what's working, you know, but also encourage those bigger players to be in the ecosystem with everyone. You know, that is really what is going to change this. And it does, in fact, rise all boats. You know, it's one of those truisms. And so we're looking at that wider, broader outcome. And the idea that we can level the playing field is what we're after here. So I am all on board for today and celebrating indie authors and talking to Angela about a very important organization, IBPA. So we'll stand by for that. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, Brooke. So hold tight, everybody, and we will be right back in a flash.
So, Grant, do you remember that lunch we had back in 2018 when we first talked about the idea of doing this podcast together?
I do. It was at a restaurant called Zoot in Berkeley, and I had a mushroom pizza. And when you asked me if I wanted to do a podcast, I said, sure thing. And then on the way home, I thought, wait a minute, I don't know the first thing about podcasting.
Yeah, I can imagine how much less trepidation we would have had if we had a resource that helped us every single step of the way.
Yeah, for sure. I know I was thinking, you know, I'd love to do a podcast with you, but I just couldn't add any more work to my plate.
Right. And that worked out really well for us, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to people. Doing a podcast can be a bit time consuming, but StartaPod would have been a lifesaver with all that they offer. I mean, just to list a few of their tools, they have in-depth video courses on their site. They offer discounted hosting and easy to purchase gear. And they just provide this exclusive pathway with access to potential ad revenue, too, which is crucial if you want to monetize your podcast.
That's right. And that's why we want all of you to know about StartaPod. It is an all-in-one resource for starting a podcast from the ground up. And they're really good folks over there at StartaPod who want you to succeed. Because if it's not working for you, you can cancel at any time.
Yeah, StartaPod has everything you need for a podcast, except listeners, and they help you get them. So I highly recommend that people take advantage of StartaPod.
Me too. And you can right now, because they're offering our listeners who sign up for StartaPod 50% off the first year of your monthly or annual subscription. But in order to do that, Grant, they need the URL. So will you do the honors?
Yes. StartaPod.com/right-minded. And right-minded is just one word, no hyphen. StartaPod.com/right-minded.
And let me just break down that offer one more time. Sign up today. Get 50% off at startapod.com/right-minded.
It's not stopapod.com. It's startapod.com/right-minded. So get started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We are here today with Angela Bowl, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Independent Book Publishers Association, IBPA, the largest book publishing association in the U.S. Prior to joining IBPA, Angela was the Deputy Executive Director of the Book Industry Study Group, and she holds a Master of Science degree in book publishing from New York University and a Bachelor of Arts degree in English with a minor in Gender Studies from Indiana University, Bloomington. In 2018, she was awarded the Book Industry Study Group's Community Builder Award, given to an individual in recognition of significant work done to engage a representative set of book industry stakeholders. And in 2019, she was named a publisher Weekly Notable Person of the Year. Welcome, Angela. It's so great to have you on Right Minded.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we're talking about a subject today that I know is near and dear to your heart, which is about how great indies are and what makes independent publishing special. And IBPA serves all sorts of indie publishers. So I wondered if we could start by you giving our listeners a high-level rundown of what kinds of indie publishers are IBPA members.
Yeah, sure. We'll say that we serve all indie publishers, right? Like the entire indie publishing spectrum. So that'll be anything from an author publisher who's working on just one book all the way up through the major indies, the largest indie publishers like Source Books and Llewellyn and Lerner. Those are also members of IBPA. But really, we're about leveling the playing field, right, for anybody that's not in the big five, that's already in the conglomerate, that needs help kind of accessing the marketplace. So we'll serve any business model, meaning if it's self-published business model, if it's a hybrid published model, if it's a traditional model, that's cool with us, as long as the books that are getting produced are professionally produced, done well, follow best practices, lean into the standards, et cetera. We're very interested in that. Less interested in your business model and less interested in your size, although, of course, size matters and, you know, growth and scale and stuff is important in the industry, as we might get into. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big multi-headed beast. There's a lot of different people to serve and different interests in what I've said there, but we're all encompassing, I'd say.
Well, Angela, you know, publishing's undergone a massive evolution in the past decade plus, and you might even say revolution. And IBPA is a real leader when it comes to inclusivity and its willingness to embrace different business models and to allow, you know, all of these publishers to thrive and also be celebrated under the IBPA umbrella, as you just said. What accounts for that spirit of inclusivity and generosity at IBPA?
I love that you say it that way. You know, I mean, I think it's in the community. I guess all communities are kind of built and based on the people that are inside of them. And the IBPA community is just, in general and by its nature, very inclusive and very generous. The staff has always been like that. We've always been inclusive. Author publishers have always been part of our membership and part of, you know, the community that we wish to serve. One of the things that I honestly believe is true, although I do see us kind of fighting with this sometimes with other points of view, is, you know, large indies have a lot to learn from author publishers who are very, very scrappy and are working on Amazon in a way that no one in the larger scale companies have been able to figure out. And obviously, author publishers have a lot to learn from the larger indies. There's a lot of cross-pollination that can happen if we just talk to each other and are open with each other about the different business models we use and the different ways that we run our companies. And I much prefer to be inside that kind of an environment than any kind of an environment that would be, you know, that would put others on the side and say, well, that's not real publishing. It's all real publishing if it's professionally done.
Yeah, I love that, Angela, and obviously subscribe to that belief. And one of the reasons that I wanted you to come on the show, in addition to how much you know about the inner workings of publishing, is because I am a real true believer when it comes to IBPA. It has so many things that make it unique: the passion, the realness and accessibility of the people in the community, and everyone really walks their talk. And the staff and the board, which I sit on, and the members of the community genuinely do want others to succeed, as you said. And so we have all this goodness in the community. It goes a long way. And the question that I have is why you think people, our listeners even, should join IBPA? What do you think are the primary benefits to being part of an association in publishing in general?
Yeah, I mean, I'll even go so far as to say, in general, I've worked my entire career in association management. So I'm a bit of a believer in this idea of community and bringing people together, whatever your focus is. So, I mean, if you were a bricklayer, I would say join your bricklayer association and work through that. But, you know, if you're a publisher, and an indie publisher in particular, absolutely join your indie publisher association. I mean, it's the national group that is working to advance your industry, advocating for you, providing you with member benefits related to marketing and education. It's just, you know, it's a hub where everyone can come in and learn from each other and grow. So we know that there are always going to be a lot more indie publishers working in the industry or doing things than will join IBPA. But if you're interested in the professionalism of your business, you know, if you want to scale it, maybe make some money doing it, and learning how to make money is something that we can help you with and work with you on. It's just a great place to connect with people, and we all got to find our community.
Angela, I'm going to get a little bit personal here. You got an MS in book publishing from NYU, and I bet a lot of listeners and I am very interested in that. I wish I would have known about that degree after I graduated from college and was flailing around wanting to know what to do with an English major. So my question is, in an industry that is, you know, likely full of English majors like me and aspiring novelists, what was your motivation for getting into book publishing in the first place?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel almost like it was inevitable. There's something like when you look back, it's been 15, 20 years now for me. And like, well, what else was I ever going to do? Right. Like being such a huge reader as a kid, coming up through school and college and really focusing everything that I did on books. And even my gender studies degree was very academic and very much about, you know, the literature and what was being written and writing. So I always think I'd wanted to work in books. And I started out in independent bookstores in Wyoming, actually, and had a really good relationship with my Random House rep, who I would call once a month and order books from. And she had this, from my perspective, in this little tiny Wyoming town, this very glamorous New York City life that I was like, this sounds great. She'd tell me, you know, she's going into the big office. She works in publishing in New York City. And I thought, that's what I want to do. And I saw an advertisement on the back of Publishers Weekly magazine that we would get in the bookstore. It just felt like there was this wide publishing world out there. And in order for me to access it, I was going to have to get to New York City. In order to get to New York City, I was going to have a like something to hold on to. So the degree seemed like the right thing to do, to apply and to have, you know, something to do when I got there instead of just more frailing around, as you said. You know, you look at it, it just feels like the train just, I got on it and it just moved through things and everything felt like it was working. So
I'm in deep admiration because I worked at a bookstore as well right after college. And I was, I think, content to sit back in my customer service chair and just read books.
Yeah. That my favorite part was shelving books, yeah, which is still probably true. I want to work in a bookstore today just so that I can get in the big shipments and see them all and then put them on the shelves in like perfect order. I'm very weird that way.
The funny thing about that is that sometimes bookstore employees, you know, the ones who are engaged are the ones who know the most about what new fiction and what new self-help books are out. And so every once in a while, I'll go and pick their brains. And it's just a little tip for people who are mm-hmm. interested in getting some good info from their local bookstores. So Angela, IBPA has an important job and you have a big job, which is multifold around education and advocacy and holding up industry standards. And so I wonder if you could talk more broadly about why this matters so much to you and to IBPA, but also to the industry more broadly.
Standards are, I mean, standards are really important to me. I was going to say it's like a four-letter word, but it's not that bad anymore. People, I think, are on board with standards at this point. This has got to come through, I think, my upbringing in the industry, having worked for the Book Industry Study Group for almost 10 years prior to IBPA. That's a standards organization. And I really saw through that work the importance of standards in keeping our supply chain working. And I think that for indie publishers, you know, playing the game as the game is set up in most ways, definitely, you know, think outside the box and do the things you're going to do. But playing the game and getting in with what needs to be done is important in order to get into the places that you need to be so that consumers can access your books. So understanding standards, not just in that, you know, you have the right cover art and it looks good, like having a high standard in that regard, but also, you know, what are the subject code standards and what are the metadata standards and all of that stuff is important, I think. We all have to work in this industry, so we should all kind of be speaking the same language.
Right. Also, Angela, I wonder if you could let our listeners know about the Ben Franklin Awards, because when I think about standards, I also think a lot of independent publishers feel like, which awards should I submit to and how do I know if they're legitimate? And we at IBPA actually have a very legitimate awards program that is pretty exciting. And so if you could just say a couple words about that as well, that would be awesome.
Yeah, it is an independent publisher award. And again, for any independent publisher, regardless of your business model, which isn't true for all award programs, right? Sometimes you can be kept on the outside of them. We love that because it means that author publisher books are being graded next to the very large indie publishers. And again, definitely levels the playing field. And an author publisher can beat out a traditional press and do and does or do whatever the right grammar is there. We run it every year and, you know, and every year we try to make it a little bit, not tougher, but we put in a little bit more stringency. Last year, for example, we really did lean into the barcode standards, which may sound a little dorky, but we put a checklist on the forms for our judges so that they could tell us whether the publisher got the barcode right on the back of the book, because that's so important for getting the book into the supply chain. And we need to know that any book that's going to win, you know, a national and reputable award program has been set up appropriately for sale in the supply chain. And I think that's an important thing. So, yeah, I mean, I obviously love our award program and hope people will consider it. But there are others. There are some. I think Ally keeps a list of award programs for indie publishers, particularly author publishers, but indie publishers in general that they would recommend.
Well, Angela, in closing, I'm going to get personal again. I know you're a career book publishing professional, but I see one possible gap in your resume, and that is that I'm not sure if you've written a novel yet. And I'm curious if you've thought about writing one, and if you have, if you want to sign up for NaNoWriMo this November.
I have thought about it, but you know, no, it crushes me. I've never written, you know, it's interesting. I've never thought of myself as a writer. I'm definitely a fan. I know this is going to be terrible, but I'm a fan. I read at least a book a week. I'm definitely a consumer. I've tried to write and I think about writing. But I've never flipped it. My mind is very business oriented, and I've focused in on you know, keeping the ships running and helping other people formulate their ideas and work through their concepts. But I'm surrounded by amazing writers like you guys. So perhaps inspiration will strike and November will be my month.
Yeah. Don't wait for it to strike. Just sign up and it will strike.
Very good.
Thank you for being with us. We so appreciate it. And everybody, the links for both IBPA, but also the organization that Angela mentioned, Ally, will put in today's episode notes. So take a look, and thank you again. Really appreciate you being on.
Yeah. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you, guys. This has been a pleasure.
Join us for Brooke's Takeaway this week, right after this quick break. So, Brooke, could we be more thrilled to have another new sponsor?
No, we in fact could not be more thrilled, because these sponsors are literally the reason we can keep the show going, and because they're amazing services that are super aligned with the stuff that we care about.
That's right. So Q Book Pipeline, which searches for and develops emerging talented authors to connect with agents and publishers.
Yeah, and this is so great, because what we're sharing with all of you today is their unpublished contest, and the entry deadline is June 1st. So Grant, could you tell our listeners a little bit about what Book Pipeline is looking for?
Yeah, basically unpublished manuscripts. And the contest is open to multiple genres of fiction and nonfiction, including lit and experimental. The contest is reviewed by industry players like Catherine Teagan Books and Verve Publishing, and several top agencies, publishers, and small presses. And the prize is pretty great, Brooke.
Yeah, I see that. $15,000. Not too shabby. And all finalists receive additional one-on-one development with pipeline execs, promotion, and long-term assistance in finding representation, which is a really unique service and an opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. So we encourage you to check out Book Pipeline. It launched in 2014 as an offshoot of Script Pipeline, which has helped launch the careers of screenwriters for more than 20 years.
So in other words, they're legit.
Very much so. Check out bookpipeline.com. That's bookpipeline.com. And one more time, bookpipeline.com.
So my takeaway is pretty simple, and it is just to check out IBPA. You know, I am the chair of this organization. I have given my last 6 years, you know, dedicated a lot of hours, all volunteer hours, to this community. And it's been highly worth my while. It's a really wonderful association. There's so much that they do for authors by way of education and offering resources. They have the annual awards program that I asked Angela about, the Benjamin Franklin Awards, which indie authors should definitely put on their list of places to submit to. So this is really a takeaway that is short and sweet, but it's to go to the URL, www.ibpa-online.org, and I promise it will be worth your while.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us for another episode of Right Minded. If this is your first time listening, we are a weekly podcast. You can come back next week, and we will be right back with another exciting guest. So please download it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I think we're basically located everywhere. And if you want to give us a star rating or a comment to let us know how we're doing, we'd love it. We'll see you next week.